another episode of Ghost Chirpers with Travis Garrison on the Field of 68 Networks. I got a very, 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 very special guest with me today, Mr. Johnny Holiday, the voice of Maryland basketball. What's going on, sir? How you doing?
I'm doing okay, Mr. Garrison. How are you, sir? This is a pleasure to have talk to me for a change.
it's an honor. I'm honored. You know, I know my time at Maryland, I enjoyed having conversations with you, you know, whether it's after a game or just, you know, randomly, like we're just talking. And I always appreciated you in our conversation.
Well, it was always nice to visit with you, representing DeMatha as well as anybody that ever played there. McDonald's All-American, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Real quick, you've been the voice of Maryland basketball for how long exactly?
I've been the voice Maryland basketball and football, both of them.
Right.
43 years. This is my 43rd year.
Wow.
So I started when Lefty was coaching back in 1979. And then Bob Wade took over when Coach steps aside. And then Gary Williams, then Mark Turgeon, and now interim coach Danny Manning. So this is my 43rd year. And Travis, I'm not the longest running guy in the Big Ten. There are four guys that have more tenure at their schools than I do at Maryland. The Indiana guy's got 48 or 49 years.
Wow.
Michigan State guy's got like 47 years. The Ohio's, you know, there's more guys than me that have more than 43 years.
But there's only one. There's only one Mr. Johnny Holiday, though. There's only one. There's only one.
Hey, thank goodness for that, huh?
So you've seen it all, literally, like firsthand, up close in person. Like, I could only imagine, and I'm not sure the conversations you had with individuals in regards to the questions that they asked you in regards to your experience and all that you've seen. Like, you've seen literally all the greats that come through Maryland. Yeah. Like, what was that like for me? And I'm pretty sure for other people as well. What was that experience like, and what has it been like? You literally seen all those jerseys that's hanging up in Xfinity Center right now. You've seen every last one of them play.
Well,
correct?
You know, when I took over Maryland in 1979, the year before I'd done George Washington basketball on the radio with Brian Maggett. Brian Maggett, who transferred to GW from Maryland, was my analyst. So I did GW for 1 year. I did Navy football for 1 year after the great Tony Roberts retired. And so I had watched Maryland basketball when McMillan was playing and Elmore was playing and Lucas and Mo Howard and all those guys. But I really, since I didn't go to Maryland, I really didn't take that much interest in it.
Right.
But I had watched them play and I knew how good and how the All-Americans that McMillan and Elmore were, and John Lucas and those guys. And then when I took over the job with Lefty, the first thing that struck me was about Lefty was how imposing a figure he was. And he was basically intimidating. I mean, he's a big guy. He's like 6'4" or so.
Right.
But the more I got to work with Lefty, that first year was Buck Williams, Albert King, Greg Manning, Reggie Jackson, Dutch Morley, all those guys. And I said, man, I really enjoy this. I enjoy the guys. And Greg Manning got to be one of my closest friends and later on became the analyst with me for 15 years. And he was tremendous sitting alongside because he went to Maryland. You know, he bled Maryland red, the colors of Maryland. Everything about him was Maryland. And not only that, but he was a great player, and Lefty loved him. Mm-hmm. And one of the best free throw shooters ever in the Big Ten. And then as we went along, we went through the days of Stevie Francis. We went through the days of yourself when you were playing, and Tony Massenburg, Walt Williams, and all those guys. And when I think back to all the players that I've been associated with, that I knew, that I interviewed, Lynn Bias, that I talked to, it's just been an absolute, I guess, thrill number one, honor number two, and something that I wish every broadcaster had a chance to do. To be associated with one school for this amount of time and to have the connection with the players and the memories are just, you know, there's a ton of memories of games, instances, situations, coaches, wins when you go to the top of the mountain and losses when you don't know what to say. So it's been an absolutely marvelous ride and some days that I will never forget.
What's been best, I mean, like I said, I can only imagine the conversations people had with you because of the experience that you had and the people that you interviewed or talked with, or like, you know, the Len Biases, the Walts. Like, you've seen those transitions. You've seen those tough times, you know, back in the days, you know, with the Len Bias situation and all those. What was – I played at Coldfield House in high school. I never got the experience to play there in college. Yeah. But I've been to a few games, and just that atmosphere within itself and how hot it gets in there. Especially in the winter, it gets really hot. I remember going to games, and it's like so cold outside, but you get in there, and everybody's like compact, like right there on you. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like the atmosphere was just like unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then just, like I said, just to experience those times, like you seeing the Len Bias and Michael Jordan games, like you've seen it all. Like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people would love to have seen the games through your eyes.
Yeah. and I got the best seat in the house right there at center court on the floor.
On the floor. What was some of your most, you probably have a ton, so it's kind of like an unfair question in a sense, but what was some of your most memorable games that every time you have a conversation with somebody, you like, this is one game I would never forget, or this is one situation I would never forget?
Well, mostly people will bring up what was Len Bias like to watch him play, to cover him, to interview him, to be around him. That's one question I get all the time. Number two, and you could appreciate this as a former player and a scorer, is they asked me to recall the Walt Williams run of 30 points in 7 consecutive games.
Wow.
And that's something that I will never forget. I'll never forget the time when Michael Jordan would come to Cole Fieldhouse and go up against Len Bias. And if you look back in the statistics, you will see that Bias outscored him almost every time they went head-to-head. He had more rebounds than Michael did when they went head-to-head. Michael left early to go to the NBA. And that worked out pretty good for him. But Bias could leap out of Cole Fieldhouse. He had such tremendous leaping ability. And people sometimes forget he was 6'8".
Right.
And you'd see him, like Walt would bring the ball up the floor for Gary, a 6'8" guard. And Bias could jump out of an arena. He could block shots as well as hit the shots and steals and assists. He just did everything. And he did it so effortlessly. He was so smooth in everything he did. And I remember a couple of times when Greg and I were doing the games and he would take a jump shot and Greg would say, he just got 10 feet off the ground with that jump shot. You know, he just had such spring in his legs. Right. He was so athletic. And then with Walt Williams started that string of 30 points or more in those 7 consecutive games. Nobody's ever done that in college basketball.
Wow.
It's a Maryland record. It's a national record that still stands today.
Really?
And we, Greg would say to, after the game is over and Walt has 33 against Wake Forest, okay? That's his first game. Yeah. So Greg would say, yeah, but, you know, let's see what he does next game. Okay, next game he'd have 37 against Florida State. And I'd say to Greg, okay, there's no way he's going to continue this. Oh, so he had 39, then the next against Virginia. It just kept going and going and going.
Wow.
And as you know, Travis, you know Walt like anybody else does.
Right.
As absolutely down-to-earth guy, to me, who hasn't changed one single bit since his days at Maryland. Mm-hmm. Despite all the money he made, all the accolades he got in the NBA, he's still the kid from Prince George's County and from over there in Clinton, Maryland. He's just the same. And that's why people love him. And I think about Stevie Francis and the great games that Francis had.
Right.
And then when you talk about the national championship team, nothing can top that with Juan or Steve and Baxter and those guys who will be back for the Ohio State game to be recognized. And that's going to be a very special occasion. But you're right about Cole Fieldhouse. There's a documentary about Cole, and Gary is in the documentary. And Gary says it's an old throwback arena that we really miss. Mm. That maybe Allen Fieldhouse at Kansas is equal to Cole Fieldhouse. And all you have to say is the word Cole, and people know you're talking about Cole Fieldhouse.
Right.
And Greg would always say, I said, Greg, what was so special about it? And you just mentioned, Travis, it was hot. It was packed. You had that home court advantage. It was sold out almost every single game. Mm. And that says something about attendance for this particular year's team. If you win, they're going to come.
Of course.
They're going to pack the place and be behind you. Simple as that. And they won. The early days, they won consistently.
Right. Yeah, it was like I said, I've been to, especially like when I was getting recruited and I would go to games. Like I was at the infamous Duke game, you know, and I was there. I remember being there and I was like, I'm leaving. The game is wrapped. I'm trying to get out of here before the traffic hits and all these people leave and bum rush, whatever. So I'm leaving. And that's when I left and I'm in the car and the radio basically said that Duke came back. And I'm like, are you serious?
I said, do you remember Gary after a game? Well, I think it was against NC State and some fans started to leave early. And Maryland was behind and we came back to win the game. And Gary came over to us as soon as the horn sounded, the game was over. Gary came over, put the headset on after every game, win or lose, and we'd conduct a post-game interview with him. Right. So Gary comes over and Gary chastised the fans that left. Hey, you folks that left, you missed a good finish. Thanks a lot. We appreciate your support. I mean, that was Coach Williams. He didn't hold anything back.
Nothing
at all. No.
That's my guy. And I tell people all the time, people always ask me, the thing I get is people ask me like the comparison between Coach Williams and Coach Wooten, or how was Coach Williams? And I tell people all the time, I said, look, if he knows you and you know him, like, you know, like,
oh yeah, like this.
Super tough. Yeah. He's just not a real sociable guy out in public. If he don't know you, then he's going to kind of say to himself. But if you know him, really good guy, cracks jokes and everything. I tell people all the time, like, oh man, practice, cracks jokes, all that, off the court, everything. But he's one of those passionate coaches. Like, he really loves the game. He cares for his players. Like, he wears it on the sleeve in a sense. But I tell people all the time, I say, look, you know, there's the difference between a Coach Wooten and Coach Williams. I tell people is Coach Wooten is quiet. He's more like a quiet tone, and Coach Williams like more yells, but they get their point across exactly the same. I tell people all the time, Coach Wooten, great human being. I'm talking one of the greatest people I ever met in my life. Like, just a great human being, but super sarcastic. Like, his sarcasm is like, he can cut it. So he's going to get his point across exactly how Coach Williams yells. Like, with his words, he was very good with his words. And I was telling somebody about a story. We were watching film, and Coach Wooten was just—he was letting us have it. We lost to O'Connell, his son, Joe Wooten. We lost to them, and he was letting us have. I'm talking about, like, don't yell, but just with his words. I'm talking about to the point. To the point, we were walking out the gym. Me, Elijah Brooks. We were walking out. Me, Corey. Like, we were walking out the gym. Out the classroom, we were watching film, man, and we was just like looking at each other, like, man, people were actually questioning, do they want to continue to play basketball? That's how bad it was. Like, he knew how to get to you to a point with his words. And I remember one time I was I walked in his office, and I just got a tattoo. I was in high school. I just got a tattoo, and he was like, "Oh, Travis, you're looking kind of big. Like, did you gain weight?" And I'm like, I'm looking at him like, what is he talking about? And he was like, I see. You got a little tattoo on your arm. You got a little tattoo on your arm. And then he gives me an example of how swimmers swim super fast. Like, they shave all the hair off their body, and that helps them swim fast. So he was talking about, but just with his words, how he used his words to try to encourage you. Like, it was unbelievable. And super sharp guy, great motivational speaker, know how to get to you. And I tell people all the time, Coach Williams kind of, he'll say it. Like, he's going to yell it. But that's just the passion and the love that they got for their players.
Well, you know what? He also, and you know this better than anybody, he had that mentality and still does. It's us against them, okay? We're a basketball team. We're a basketball family. He would say to me, you're part of our basketball family. You're part of our team. You represent us on the radio. You talk about us. You defend us. You protect us. It's us against them. Right. And that mentality, I think, is what maybe is lacking today in a lot of these colleges around the country that don't have the same attitude that Gary had. And the result, a national championship, a result, a Final Four, all-time winningest coach. I mean, all these things together. And it's his alma mater. I mean, he loves the University of Maryland.
Right.
And I'm so happy he's on the search committee to pick out, help select that new head coach we're going to have in basketball once the season comes to an end. But I love the guy. When my daughter got married, Maura got married, we said, should we send Coach Williams an invitation? Well, he's not going to come. That was the response. He's too busy. He's not going to come.
Right.
First guy there was Coach Williams. Wow. Last guy to leave the wedding reception was Coach Williams.
Wow.
When my grandson, Jack Raleigh, who's now 22, had a brain tumor at the age of 11, and he got through all of his chemotherapy, he got through all of his radiation, he had no hair. And Coach says, hey, how about if we ask Jack, would he like to be a ball boy? That may help him in his therapy, to be around people, to be around basketball players.
Right.
And the kids on that team, when he was 11 years old, kind of embraced him, as did Coach Williams. And he's out there on the floor. He's the only kid with no hair, a little bald-headed kid, because he lost it all in chemo.
Right.
And Gary would interact with him and brought him in to be part of the organization. And that went a long way at helping him in his rehab, because he took his mind off all the other stuff. All he's thinking about was getting that ball and wiping the floor. And I'm busy and I got to do that. I can't talk, Pa, because I'm busy here doing the stuff for the team. Right. It kept him busy and engaged. And I'll never forget Coach Williams for that. And Coach Friedgen did the same thing in football. Same thing. And he was on the sideline for all the games.
Right. And those are the stories that people don't hear about.
Oh, you never hear.
All they know is, you know, Coach Williams on the sideline.
That doesn't sell newspapers. It doesn't make people watch television. If it could be negative, anything negative, oh, they'll put that out there.
Of course, you know.
If something going wrong, let's put that in the headlines. But let's don't put the good stuff. I don't want to go there.
Right. And I definitely get it. It's unfortunate. Like you said, it is. Like, that's the nature of the business, in a sense, like what sells newspapers. But those are the conversations I have with individuals when it comes to the Coach Williams. How is he? What kind of person is he? Oh, man, it's a great, if you know him, trust me, he loves you. He's going to joke with you. Great guy.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, during that Len Bias time, obviously when everything went down, what was that like? But what was that like in regards to for you? And you had to cover that. I mean, like, you were there, like you were in the midst of it. And I didn't know anything about it until maybe high school, because I didn't follow college, but I wasn't into basketball like that in regards to following college basketballs and things of that nature. But once I started hearing stories and I started, you know, getting closer to deciding what college to go to, and then I started knowing more about Maryland, everybody's brought up Len Bias. Even when I was in Ukraine, they had like a special on Len Bias on ESPN, and you know, the players, us and the players, we watched it. But what was it like in regards to, what was that experience like, just going through that? Like, you lived through the time of that, and then having to overcome it, in a sense.
I was doing morning sports at WMAL at the time. WMAL carried the Maryland games on radio. And I was also doing sports for ABC Network out of Washington at the same time. So I got a call about little after 7 o'clock in the morning. And this voice says, they just brought Lynn Bias into Leland Memorial Hospital, and they think he had a heart attack. So my boss says to me, get in the car. This doesn't sound right. A young 20-something, 21, 22-year-old kid having a heart attack.
Right.
So on the way out to the hospital, they get word that he had passed away. And they said, go to the school. So I went to the school. Travis, it was like zombies walking around. I ran into Dick Dahl. I ran into the chancellor walking the hallway. Everybody was in total shock, as you can imagine. I couldn't believe it. Nobody could believe it, that what had happened. And then as it proceeded, it cost the athletic director his job. It cost the president his job. Lefty got kind of pushed out the door, which was no fault of his own.
Right.
You know, we talked about that 100,000 times. Mm. You can't police a player 24 hours a day.
Right.
You can coach him, but you're right. Not with him all the time.
Right.
And his Lynn's mom called me and asked if I would sing at his funeral. And I said, Mrs. Bias, I can't do that. She says, why? You sing in theater. You do theater performances. You do shows and you're singing. I said, well, that's a little bit different than singing at a, well, you've sung at funerals. I said, I have, but this, and I thought, okay, I'll do it. Right. So when they had the service at the chapel, I was upstairs in the balcony of the chapel, and it was everything I could do. I sang the Lord's Prayer, and I got through the song because I thought about everything but what I was singing, just to keep my mind away from the emotion. And at the end of the song, I mean, I knew I was going to break down and start crying. And there was nothing wrong with an older guy like me crying at that time. Right. And his mom is walking up the aisle behind the casket, and she blows me a kiss. And at that point, I went to pieces. And then as the investigation continued and more things came out, and it was, I just shook my head in disbelief like everybody else did. Mm-hmm. And then in dealing with Mrs. Bias over all these years, she had made a comment. She said, you know, my son is bigger in death than he would have been in life because of the message he put to young people about drugs. And her message to young people is, hey, look at my son. He was an all-American basketball player. He had everything going for him.
Right.
And he makes a mistake of trying a substance. Boom. He's gone.
Right.
It could happen to you kids. Do not try it even one time, because you're messing with your life, basically. And all I think about the good things of Lynn Bias, the smile, his personality, his athleticism. How generous he was to young people, that he would always sign autographs and take pictures, you know, like you guys did when you were playing, same right. thing. And right. he knew the responsibility of trying to be a good role model for those kids. But he, in my mind, he'll always remain one of the top two or three or four of the all-time greatest players at the University of Maryland. It was a tragic time that affected so many different lives and futures of people. Nobody should have to go through that again. Right. And I'll tell you one story. We were down at Wake Forest, and Coach and I were doing the pregame interview. This is probably 10 years after Lynn Bias had passed away. Mm-hmm. And I, on the other side of the floor, ESPN is doing their tease for the broadcast. Mm-hmm. And we could hear what the guys are saying because the arena was empty. Well, Maryland's still trying to recover from the death of Lynn Bias. So Gary says, excuse me one second, Johnny. He gets up and he went across the floor to those guys and said, that's 10 years ago. That's not today. Okay, let's give it up. Okay, let's focus on this game today with Wake Forest or whatever school it was. And let's not focus on what happened 10 years ago. He went nuts.
Right.
And I applauded him. I said, Coach, that's great. That is really, really good. And people hung on to that thing for so many years. And I think that's one of the reasons Coach wasn't in the Hall of Fame. Coach Drizel everybody blamed him for Lynn Bias's death, and you can't do that. You can't do that.
And I had a number of conversations. I met Justin Gatlin after we won an ACC championship. I think we went down to Carolina, and I met him. I think he came to the hotel. We were doing the media coverage and everything, and I met him there. And we stayed in contact for a little bit. Then I haven't talked to him in a while. And I know when I use I'll talk to guys, and they'd be like, you know, it's always a tough conversation to have when you talk about Lynn Bias, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. And I had Tony Massenberg on, I had Walt Williams on, I had Justin Gatlin on, and they spoke about that. And I was kind of, I didn't know about how I should bring it up, or, you know, should I bring it up? I didn't know, you know, because of, yeah. I know that it's still like a tough subject for individuals to talk about.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But the stories I heard in regards to the aftermath of Mr. Bias's death, I was shocked. I couldn't comprehend, because the stories, like, you know, I think Walt was telling me, like, you know, how guys were like, you know, they'll try to go to other schools, they transfer, and it just followed them. And they was called criminals, and they was called bad names, and kid. And I'm just like, for me, I can only imagine being a young kid, you know, because I'm in college, I was still trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? So then you talk about these kids, in a sense, young men, is getting called these names, or getting blamed for something they probably had nothing to do with or be a part of, but it followed them forever. Like, I think Justin Gatlin was just saying he was on vacation and thinking like Hawaii, and that somebody saw him and like went up to him, and that's the first thing they, you played with Lynn Bias, who died of such and such. And I was just like, wow, like, even to this day, like, it was like he just told, I think he said the story that happened like maybe last year that happened to him.
Last year.
He said like it's still like people, those conversations still, that's what they remember him about. That's what they, and it was.
And Lynn Bias passed away 35 years ago.
Exactly.
Years ago. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just those stories. And I'm just like, because like I said, I didn't follow college basketball growing up. So a lot of things I had to learn and understand, and the history, even the history of America, I didn't start understanding nothing about college basketball until I got to the math, because I had to, because all these college coaches were coming into the gym, and I'm like, who's that? Who's that? And they had to give me a crash course of
that's John Wooden. Oh, that's Gary Williams. Oh, that's Dean Smith over there.
literally, it was a crash. I had to go through a crash course because the Joe Fortes, the Keith Bogans, all those guys, and then they attracted so many coaches. So yeah, I had to get a crash course of who was who about college basketball. But yeah, those stories, I'm just like, you know, when the way Walt explained it, and Tony Massenberg talking about how he played with them, but you know, he's on the court with them, but he's just so in awe of just the type of player. Like he's playing, but it's like I'm watching him at the same time. Like I'm, you know, this guy, and it's just it's funny. I had Coach Dickerson, Dave Dickerson, on not too long ago. And he gave me a tape of Lynn Bias when I was in college, when they played North Carolina. I think North Carolina was number one. And Maryland played at North Carolina. And I think that's when they upset them. I think my brother took the tape. I don't know what the tape is now. But I saw that tape.
Was that the first loss in Smith Center?
I think so, yeah.
The overtime win when Gatlin threw the ball off of Jones. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bias had 35 in that game.
Exactly. Right. It was a legendary game. Just watching him play without a 3-point line, and just how he rose up and shot the ball, and the crazy highlights he had, you know, was, I'm just like,
oh yeah,
wow. It was, and then like I said, you was there firsthand, you seen it up close in person. Like I could just only imagine. And then like I said, you know, with his death and the impact that had, and still to this day, and then, you know, he just got into the Hall of Fame at Maryland, which I think was long overdue. But he made so much of an impact on the game of basketball, like you said. And his mom spoke at my church when I was in high school. His mom came to my church and spoke, and she's a great speaker. And I think she's still going around speaking to this day.
She is still speaking. Yeah. Yeah. And you know something, Travis? I think we all lose sight of the fact that look what that family went through. They lost Jay.
Right.
2 years after that, he got shot and killed in Prince George's Plaza. So mm-hmm. Mr. and Mrs. Bias lost two kids.
Right.
Can you imagine what a family, I mean, that you can't even, you can't make that stuff up.
Right.
And she chose to take it to another level and say, okay, I've lost these two kids, but there's a message there somewhere I can deliver and maybe I can help other people. And that's what she's still doing to this very day in
right.
speeches and talks and interacting with young people about the dangers of drugs. And I think hats off to Mrs. Bias for all that she does for the young people today. Magnificent.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, but before we start talking some more Myrna basketball, let me tell you guys a little bit about our partners over at Bet Rivers Sportsbook. If you haven't signed up with Bet Rivers yet, now's the time, because they are offering a $250 match bonus for your first deposit. But what sets them apart is that they require just one playthrough to turn your bonus into cash money. With their new Rush Pay instant approval, withdrawing your winnings is safer, more secure, and more reliable. With basketball season tipping off, get in on the action by going to BetRivers.com today or by downloading the BetRivers app. Must be 21 years or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, you know what I like about what you just did, Travis? You memorized that whole thing. You weren't reading a single thing. You had that thing off the top of your head. That was really nice.
I appreciate. Hey, I'm trying to be. I'm trying to be like you. I'm trying to.
You don't want to be like me. You want to be like you.
I'm trying to be the best, Mr. Holiday. I'm trying to be as great as you are. But. So you seen that transition from the Lefty Driesel days, you know, coming out of that, and then the Coach Williams coming in after Bobby Wade. Coach Williams coming in, and then Walt, the infamous people say like. You know, other than them Bias, Walt, it was like the most important factor in Maryland basketball because he stayed. What was that transition like? And like I said, you covered it. You was there when they would go to tournaments and they got banned from so much. What was that transition like? And what was the state of that environment that during that time?
Well, you remember with the first couple of years when Gary took over, Maryland was on probation.
Right.
So I'll never forget when he came over to Greg and I, the first game we did on, there was no television, okay? Taken off television, scholarships reduced, it was because of the previous administration.
Right.
And so Gary comes over and on our pregame interview with us, he said, well, I guess for the entire year, they're going to have to listen to you guys for Maryland basketball. And Greg and I started laughing at Gary. That's the only way you're going to be able to follow us is with Johnny Holiday and Greg Manning. Well, that could be a good thing or a bad thing. We'll find out. But Walt had a chance to leave. You know, he could have said, I'm not going to stick around here. Right. Walt never went to an NCAA tournament game because they couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. So he never got to celebrate like the Juan Dixons, the Steve Blakes, and the other guys that went to the tournament did.
Right.
And he basically, and Gary Williams says this today, he said it for years, Walt Williams saved the Maryland basketball program because he always wanted to come to Maryland. He grew up as a kid idolizing, you know, Lynn Bias. He wanted to be like Bias.
Right.
And he said he promised his mom and dad he's going to get his degree. He's going to stay at home so my family, my friends, my teammates from Crossland can come see me play. And how many times in this day and age do you see a player or a coach say, I'm not going to go anywhere, and 2 weeks later they're gone?
Of course.
No, I love it here. I'm not thinking of transferring, and boom, he's gone the next day.
Right.
It happens all the time. But Walt stuck to his word. He gave Maryland a lot of money for a scholarship in his dad's name.
Wow.
And he's with us on radio right now.
Right.
One of our analysts, he's been with us for many, many years. And all that is thanks to Coach Williams. Coach Williams suggested, if you have room, how about we work Walt into your program? I said, yeah, absolutely. A name like that and a legend like that, would be glad to.
Of course.
Glad to. So he's basically with us, thanks to Coach Williams bringing it up to me and suggesting to me that he'd be a great addition to us. And he's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Walt's my guy. I mean, I remember, you know, I introduced to him like back in high school. But just the conversation, like you said, the same person, like Same exact guy. Down to earth, going to tell it like it is. And, you know, just cause, like I said, I had him on and just the conversations. Because even when I was, you know, doing this podcast and, you know, I was hesitant because I was like, I'm not a reporter. I don't know what questions to ask and this, that, and the third. But just having conversations with these guys, it's been interesting. A lot of stuff I didn't know. And a lot of stuff probably people didn't know overall. And just, it's funny. I was talking, I was talking to Chick Hernandez. And I was like, it's interesting, man, you know, because a lot of these guys like to talk. So therefore, I don't even have to say anything. Like when I had Tony on, oh man, Tony yeah. just he went. It's like, and I love it because obviously it makes what I have to do easier because I don't have to drag anything out. But it's just the conversation, what they talk about, and the stuff. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that. Like I said back with the Lynn Bias situation and the aftermath, I had no clue. I had no clue that those guys went through it. I knew that it was a devastating loss and everything that happened in regards to the emotions and how campus was, but all the ins and outs of these individuals' lives and how it followed them for so many years, things like that, I didn't know.
That's the same stuff Jeff Baxter, if you talk to Jeff, he says, you know, everybody, because Jeff was a good talker, a good mm-hmm. interview, Jeff Atkins had the same reaction because he was on that team, mm-hmm. and the media goes for guys that can talk and are verbal. And Jeff got just hit, Jeff Baxter, left and right with questions. And I wasn't there. What was he like? Well, you know, all this stuff, it affected so yeah. many people in right. so many different ways.
Right, exactly. And like you said, his mom is still going around and speaking to this day. And just like, it's life lesson. I was talking to DeQuell Jackson, and we were just talking about our experience on campus, being a young man. And just for me, I'm coming in from Dematha, you know, McDonald's All-American, but I don't understand the responsibility I have in a sense, you know, because I didn't know. I was like, for me, I'm just like any other student.
Well, you're an 18-year-old kid.
You don't
18-year-old kid that's been protected probably at Dematha all mm-hmm. the way through because you're the meal ticket for that Dematha Stags basketball team.
Right.
Yeah. Then you get to Maryland and you find out, well, there's some other guys that are just as good as I am here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to work a little bit. I didn't have to work hard at Dematha.
Right.
Because we had some pretty good players. You played with Joe Forte, didn't you?
No, I was my freshman year was his senior year. I was on JV. He was on varsity.
Okay. Yeah. And you had some pretty good teammates at Dematha too. Right. But you were right. the guy. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's a transition for you too, I'm sure.
It was a major transition for a number of different reasons. You guys just won a national championship, and I was coming in off the coattail of that, the high off that. So campus was crazy, and just, you know, when I was at Dematha, I didn't do too much. I went school, practice, home, school, practice, game, school, home, all that. Yeah. So that was my life. Then I get to Maryland, it's like it's college life.
The party's over, huh?
Oh my goodness! It was crazy, but it's so I can understand the it took a toll on me emotionally, mentally, because I was trying to please everybody and do everything, and it was a battle that, you know, like I said, DeQuell, me and him talked about it. He went through something similar like that. And it's just having conversations with people in regards to, even now when I speak to kids and young teens that want to play college basketball, be on that level, I said, look, I got to be, especially nowadays, everything's social media. I said, you have a responsibility, whether you want to or not. You have a responsibility, and people are looking at you totally different. You're not like everybody else. Regardless of how bad you think you are, whatever, you're not, you're people are looking at you with a microscope, and you have to be careful about every move you make, especially nowadays because everybody's paparazzi. Everybody has a
phone. It's funny you bring up DeQuell Jackson. During football season, they bring in former players that happen mm-hmm. to come to the game. They want to pop up and say hello and visit. And so a lot of times they'll bring a guy in the booth, and the basketball players, you know, because right. you see them and they're, you know, without their uniforms on.
Right.
But football players with the helmets on and the shoulder, sometimes you can't tell who you're. So they bring this big guy in, He comes over, gives me a bear hug, and he's going to be the halftime guest. But I don't know who he is.
Right.
And so he sits down, and we start off, and I don't know, Travis, who I'm talking to. And I'm trying to get some kind of a clue. You know, I said, so how you doing? Hey, I'm doing good, Johnny. Good to see you, man. I said, hey, it's great to have you here with us, huh? That's some first half, huh? Yeah. Yeah, the defense is playing pretty good. And boy, I remember my days when the defense. So, okay, right away, I know he's a defensive player. So I said, so what have you been up to recently? He said, well, you know, in Cleveland this year, we had, I said, Cleveland? The Browns? DeQuell Jackson is the guy I'm talking to, you know.
Oh.
And I had seen him at a Nationals game when I was doing the Nationals pregame and postgame on television. And he came up the same way. He gave me a big bear hug from behind at Nationals Park. I looked up. Hey, how you doing? I had no idea who I was talking to. He didn't have number – he wore 52, I think, when he was playing.
Right,
I never – I didn't – I said, DeQuell, without the jersey and the helmet and the name on the back, I don't know who the heck you are.
Oh
my God.
That is hilarious.
Yeah,
that's my guy. That's my guy. Because we came in together.
Really.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's funny. Like, I was cool. I was telling him, I was like, we were cool on campus because we came in together. We had classes together. But, you know, obviously the football, basketball player, we're cool, but we didn't really hang out like that. It was two different parties in a sense,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so you've seen those days in regards to the Lefty Gizelles and, you know, by the way, that you know, the Len Bias, that situation. But then now you get into the Juan Dixons, the Steve Blakes. Now you're going to the Final Four. What was that like for you, seeing those times and seeing how they overcame and got to their first and only national championship? What was that experience like for you?
Well, if you remember the year before, we go to Minneapolis and we got beat by Duke in the semifinals, mm-hmm. in the Final Four, and a game that we had the lead and let that thing slip away, and they come back and they win it. And every single guy on that team made a vow after that game, we got this far. Next year, coach, we're going to come back. We're going to win the whole darn thing. We're going to win everything. And I think Gary's reaction was, well, you should have won this game, okay? You know, talk is cheap. Let's see what you do next year. They came back. And there wasn't one single high school All-American on that team. Blake wasn't a high school All-American.
Right.
Dixon wasn't from up in Baltimore. Taj Holden, none of those guys.
Right.
They were just a bunch of guys that blended together with that tough mentality that they got from Coach Williams, that we will not be beaten by anybody mentality,
right.
And that it's us, as Gary said, us against them,
exactly.
And the chip on the shoulder.
Right.
You know, and if you remember, they lost the first game of the year to Arizona, mm-hmm. up in Madison Square Garden. And mm-hmm. I'm saying, oh, here we go. Here we go. You lose the first game of the year. What's this going to be like?
Right.
They ended up what? Losing two games that year? Four games? It's on my ring right here. They were 34 and what were they? Take off my national championship ring. 34-2, I think it was. Something like that.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I'm sorry. 32-4.
Wow.
32-4. And there's the old national
championship
ring. Right? So they lost four games. They lost three games afterwards. And then when you look at who they had to beat to get to Indiana,
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, Siena, Kansas, Kentucky, Connecticut. And I'll never forget the game that Juan had against Caron Butler.
Mm-hmm. I remember that game. I remember that game.
I think Juan had 33 maybe in that game.
Juan went off, yeah.
He went off. But Baxter was, you know, he was the most viable player of two regionals, the one the year before and the one that year. And wow. And Lonnie was high scorer against Indiana in the championship game. But all those guys just blended together with a toughness that every basketball team should have. And it's not easy to win a national championship. Right. If it was, you'd do it the next year and the next year
of
and the next year.
Of course.
And that's why it's been such a long time, 20 years ago.
Right.
But, man, they were something. And to see the run that they had through all those schools to get to Indiana was incredible. than to get to the Georgia Dome and to watch the national championship game. And I'm sitting there with Chris Nockey, who's doing the games with me.
Right.
And we're saying, you know something, this is one broadcaster, two broadcasters have a chance to broadcast a national championship game. Us and the Indiana guy, Don Fisher.
Right. Right.
And what a thrill it would be if we win this thing. We'll be the last guy standing.
Wow.
And they did. And the final second's ticking off. And I'm looking down at the floor. And Maryland's starting to celebrate. And here's Juan running his fingers through Gary's hair and messing up his hair. And Chris Wilcox coming and give, you know, the celebration began. And,
right.
And I kind of got choked up. And when the final seconds ticked off, all I could say was, and the kids have done it. Maryland wins their first ever national championship. Let's enjoy the celebration. And we just kind of bailed out and let the crowd take over after that.
Right. It,
then the celebration back at the hotel afterwards, when the team came back in the lobby, everybody packed in the lobby of the hotel and the players signing autograph, posing for pictures. And the next day when we fly back to BWI, and as the plane lands, there are the fire trucks with all the fire hoses. And wow. They're getting a celebration of being sprayed by the fire department as they're rolling to taxi to get on the buses. We come off the plane. We get on the buses. We're heading down 95. Cars were pulled over on the side of the road. People out waving at the buses going by. Helicopters above the buses filming. As we're going to Cole Fieldhouse, they had called an impromptu pep rally celebration, and they didn't have a lot of time to put it together.
Right.
13,000 people showed up for this just quick put-together celebration. But I'll never forget 95. Horns sounding, people standing, cars on the side of the – all the way down, Travis, all the way down to Cole Fieldhouse. And, you know, looking out the window and the guys were waving. It just something that I would love to go through again. I mean, that was as high as you can get right there.
Right.
It was remarkable, remarkable time.
I can only imagine, I was in New York and I was actually watching the game with Bracy Wright, who ended up going to Indiana. And we were watching the game together, like side by side, like we watching the game and talking trash to each other. But I just seen, like on the news, obviously news cameras in regards to how College Park was, the fires and, you know, how Route 1, you know. So it was, and like I said, I can just only imagine, you know, just you being there through it all in the sense of, you know, through the years what Coach Williams had to overcome and the university had to overcome, and then they finally get, you know, turn things around and get things to the promised land. So speaking of that now, with what Maryland's going through, obviously with Coach Turgeon stepping down, was it a surprise to you that it happened when it happened? And what are your thoughts in regards to moving forward for the university, kind of to get the fans back in the stands, if you want to say?
Well, I think it was unfortunate. Whatever triggered Mark to make his decision to walk away, that's personal to him, and he obviously felt that. Maybe a change would help the basketball program. I don't know. My relationship with him was tremendous.
Right.
I love the guy. I love what he stood for. A family guy. We go to the same church together, Holy Redeemer in Kensington. His daughter is a senior at Georgetown Visitation. One of my granddaughters is a freshman. She carpools with her to school every day. Always did things the right way. Those with higher power than I have make those decisions along who's going to be the coach and so forth. And Maryland's a great job. It's a fabulous, fabulous job. So many opportunities in this area.
Right.
And the legend of Maryland basketball is so tremendous that I think they're going to get the right guy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that want to come coach here.
Right.
A lot of people. And I know it's going to be a challenge for the search committee to bring in this new head coach, whoever it may be, and make sure that all these kids that stay here and want to play at Maryland and the new people coming in understand that there's a marvelous tradition at the University of Maryland, national championships,
right.
Not only in basketball, but in other sports as well. Look at lacrosse, look at field hockey, look at
exactly.
you know, football many, many years ago, all the bowl games we've gone to.
Right.
So it's a plum job, and it'll be a tough job to find that right guy, but they'll do it. I mean, they'll do it. And as soon as the season's over, I hope it'll be announced quickly so the recruiting can get back on track. I mean, right now you don't know who the coach is going to be. That's unfortunate. Right. And a lot of the players probably figuring, well, is this new coach going to like me? Am I going to stay? Does he want me to stay? Does he want me to leave with a transfer portal? Yeah. But there are so many good players out there that can come in to help us. And it's going to be okay. I have a lot of faith. It's going to be okay. They're going to get back where it used to be with consistent 20-game seasons, NCAA tournaments, hopefully a Big Ten championship on the horizon like we had a couple of years ago, you know, tying Wisconsin for that. So it's going to be okay, Travis, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, you know, I have conversations with people all the time about, you know, that you know, the coaching change and what things are going to look like. So now, like I said, I think things are going to be on the up and up. And like you said, it got to happen quick for they get back on track with things, you know, recruiting and everything. But Mr. Holiday, I'm not going to take too much of your,
I got to ask you one thing. Okay. Before we go, we still got some time.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Anything for you.
I want you to tell the fans about the game winning shot against Florida in Gainesville when they were number one in the country. Okay, and that's the only basket I believe you had that game.
That is.
To win the game, was it over? It was overtime, wasn't it?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I want you to tell. Have you explained that on your podcast yet?
I have not talked to. I think Coach Williams may have brought it up, but I don't think I went into detail about it. So that game, I was struggling. I couldn't make anything. You know, like I tell people all the time, you know, when I was at Maryland, it was tough for me mentally to grasp everything and to try to, you know, perform. I was distracted by things that's going on off the court in regards to, you know, I wanted to have fun and party all the time. So I was, I was distracted.
Plus, there's also pressure on you to come to Maryland because you were a McDonald's High School All-American and people expected you to score 25, 30 points a game. Ain't gonna happen.
Right. So we have that, and then, you know, me reading the blogs, reading papers, just focusing on all the negative stuff that was going on. So I was trying to please everybody. So I was in my head. So I was in my head too much. I was in my head. But that game, and I honestly, that's one of the games I do watch back. Oh, they always read the highlights, or some people post the highlights, and I see, and I'm watching it because I'm watching it from the viewer's perspective now, and I'm looking how everything played out, and. Like I said, I've been struggling the whole game. I didn't make a – that was my only shot.
I know. I was there.
That was my only shot. So that was my only basket, I want to say. So it was just like I didn't think twice because that's my shot. That was my shot. Like, that's something that we run in practice. And I every time I watch it, I look at the bench. I look at the bench's reaction when that shot goes up because I know they probably was like, no. So I always look at that, and my brother, he was watching the game, and he said people that he was watching it around, they were like, no. And then when I made it, everybody obviously cheered.
Don't take that shot.
He didn't score all game. Why is he shooting the balls? So, hey,
do you remember after the game, the crowd was stunned, okay?
Yeah.
And the crowd was on Gary as Gary and everybody's dancing around midcourt, and he's walking off the floor, and they're yelling things at Gary, and Gary stops and points up to the scoreboard. That's all he does. You know, Gary number one, he points up to the scoreboard, pumps his fist, and walks off the floor.
That's the kind of guy who was, you know, when I went in the locker room, I like cried my eyes out when I went in the locker room.
Really?
I cried my eyes out when I went in the locker room because I felt so bad that, like, I played so bad. I mean, like, I was, that's how much I was in my head. I literally went in the locker room and I just cried because it was like me, I was really playing against my, like, I was really against myself, you know what I mean? So mentally, I was just going through a lot. So even though I made a shot, the game winning shot, everybody was cheering. I'm bawling. I'm crying my eyes out because I was like, man, I'm just struggling so bad, you know, and it was just a lot of pressure. But now, I will always remember that shot. And I always ask, I go to tailgates for the football game. So getting other people's perspective of the ACC championship run, that shot, you know, their from their eyes, from their perspective, it's a pretty cool thing when I talk to people about what was it like when we was playing the AC tournament. Sure. And we went on that run and how the fans were in the you know, I had a guy tell me, like, during the NC State game, they left the gym, they left the arena. They was walking out, and then they heard us coming back, and everybody ran back into the arena. So just to hear people's perspective is pretty cool, and I definitely enjoy listening to stories like that, because it's very rare that I have time to reflect on all the things that I went through, you know, especially in college. So
I'll never forget. That's one of the greatest shots that I've ever called, I think, in my 43 years. That one.
Wow.
I'll never, the game-winning shot against Georgia Tech a couple of years ago at Xfinity Center.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of the kid's name that hit that shot. He passed away.
Cliff Tucker.
Cliff Tucker, yeah. Cliff Tucker,
yes.
He got tragically killed in an automobile accident a couple of years ago. That shot. And that ranks up there. That's got to be one of the best of my all-time top five. And the one Drew Nicholas hit against.
I was just about to say that.
Nashville, Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, we was about to end up losing that game if he didn't hit that shot in the first – I think it was the first round. The first game of the first round. The kid was going off. I forget the kid's name for that team we played. I think it was like something Charlotte. I forget the UNC – Charlottesville or something like that, but the kid was going crazy. But yeah, Drew hit that shot right by the bench and then ran off, and yeah, it was.
He went to the locker room, but unfortunately, the locker room was that way. The teammates got him and brought him back.
That was definitely a one-legged runoff.
Yeah, yep, that was great.
Save our run.
Yeah.
But Mr. Holiday, I definitely appreciate you joining the Go Terps with Travis Garrison. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you, and I appreciate, like I said, all the times, even when I was at Maryland, even when I go back to the games, the conversations we have. I mean, you very much appreciate it. I mean, through basketball, all around, you're a legend in my eyes. You're a legend to a lot of other people as well. And I just appreciate you for taking your time out to, you know, give little old me a little of good time today.
Travis, this has been a lot of fun. It brought back a ton of memories for me. And, you know, we could have probably talked another hour about games and coaches and players and stuff like that. But I've told you before, you're one of my all-time favorites. So you were always accessible, always available for an interview. Even if you had a bad game and I wanted to talk to you, you'd always say, of course I can talk to you. You know, and I know you didn't want to do it sometimes because you're kind of down a little bit. But I will always appreciate that. And I'm glad you're doing these podcasts. This is great. This is great.
I really appreciate it. Like I said, I enjoy it. Like I said, to have conversations, talk to people about their experiences because they tend to from their islands, and I'm pretty sure a lot of other people would appreciate it too. So, now I'm grateful to be able to host something like this. So,
well, all the best. This is tremendous. Keep it going, and I can't wait to check you out.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I definitely appreciate it, Mr. Holiday, and I can't wait to see you at the next game.
I'll be there. I'll be looking for you.
All right, Ms. Allen. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.